Welcome to another episode of Tools, Talents, and Techniques. I'm your host, Dustin Sutton, and today it is an absolute pleasure to welcome to the show a friend, a broker extraordinaire. He's a teacher, he's a mentor, he's a lot of things. He's the founder and CEO of Revolt CRE, Mr. Matthew Drain. Matt, welcome to the show.
Dustin, it's an honor and privilege. I'm excited about our conversation. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and so before we jump into, can you just give a brief introduction on who you are and what you do?
Sure.
Then we'll dive into all the details. Now you got there.
Absolutely. My name is Matthew E. Drain. I'm a Cincinnati, Ohio native, born and raised in the great state of Ohio. We recently won a championship. Go Buckeyes! And I like to just say, I always introduce myself first as a father, a husband. Those two things are part of my everyday fiber and being. Real estate has been part of my life originally since 2005 on the residential side, but since 2012, full-time as a commercial real estate advisor. So since 2012, in some way, shape, or form, I've been transacting multifamily assets directly or helping over 700 advisors throughout my career do that through a market leader position or role. So commercial real estate has been what I live, eat, and breathe since 2012.
Okay, so for my family members who are Michigan alumni and fans, don't turn off the episode.
Wait, it gets better. It gets better, you know.
So it's funny. I have some family that went to Michigan, so they're go blue all day. So
sure.
Although I didn't go to Michigan, so there I'm kind of neutral.
Okay, so we can continue with the conversation. You're not going to kick me out.
No, we're all good. So let's talk about the Matthew E. Drain origin story, because you mentioned, sure, you know, where you grew up. Like, where did this begin? Like, tell me about, you know, high school. You know, were you in athletics? Like, what did you see yourself doing as a young man?
Sure. And that's a great question. And I will kind of take it back, right? So I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. So a middle market, if you will. So I didn't grow up in a big city. Very traditional upbringing. My father was in real estate. He owned single families and duplexes. So I was exposed to the business early. A lot of Home Depot and Lowe's visits on Saturday mornings. And I grew up just watching my dad, and he was trying to build, you know, something, build a portfolio. You know, my grandmother was a property owner originally from Mississippi. So I was fortunate enough to see people that looked like me and my direct family members control, own, and operate real estate. Not to an extent to where, you know, we're all striving to own and operate today, but just the simple fact of having a duplex was a big deal for us. And that was my origin. And I talk about my background because I went to public school, North Avondale Montessori. I'll give a full shout out. So I went to public school until seventh grade. And I mentioned that because my dad was really intentional about exposing me to just all walks of life and people. So I played baseball in Over the Rhine, have a very memorable childhood experience where there were some riots taking place during a baseball practice. I played football in the inner city growing up. And when I went to Seven Hills, which is a predominantly white private school, my graduating class had a class of 50. It was the opposite experience. And I was the minority. And I saw a different side of living and of wealth and of means. And my network started to expand. But I bring that story full circle because when I think back over my career in real estate, one of the things that's been really helpful is my ability to connect with the person and the property owner. And I think my multi-tiered and multifaceted upbringing of being in the inner city for a portion of my youth, being exposed to high net worth individuals through middle school and high school, college, I attended Miami of Ohio, another small private school, but the Ivy League of the Midwest. I saw it on both sides. And I really think that a big part of my success is learning how to interact with people because I had a very diverse upbringing in terms of exposure. So that's the short answer on my upbringing. And you can dig in on any one of those points if you like.
Yeah, well, there's one that's specific that, because you mentioned you're being exposed to real estate at an early age. Because you were exposed to it, did you know that's what you wanted to do? And that did that dictate your major and what you studied in college?
Absolutely. I admired, and to this day, I still admire my father. He's my role model. He's the first businessman that I saw carry a briefcase. I wanted to carry a briefcase. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up, but I wanted to be in business. And I see a lot of myself in my father. He had a couple of different hustles, a couple of different entrepreneurial ventures. And I picked up on that. I mean, he encouraged me to start a lawnmower or a landscaping route. So I was pushing the lawnmower around the neighborhood, you know, $20 hits, cutting grass growing up. My first job was in retail at Circuit City. I was selling CDs. And I remember those customer interactions in a retail environment. Those were all reps that I now use in my day-to-day business. But seeing my father own real estate, the largest property he ever owned was a 4-unit. I anchored in on that and said, this is what I want to do. So my first property that I purchased was my first year out of college in 2005. I bought 2 single family homes, and I grew up in the Carlton Sheets era. So reading books and listening to cassette tapes, learning how to structure deals, that was the 80s. I mean, that was the 80s and early 90s, and that was my start. But I knew I wanted to take real estate further than what my dad had done personally. And that was my goal. And I wanted to sell apartment buildings in full transparency because I wanted to one day own apartment buildings. And what better way to learn how to underwrite multifamily assets than to see in real time what great operators do, what they get wrong, how to conservatively underwrite, what deals pencil and which deals don't. So multifamily, I did dial in on as an asset type pretty early as a result of seeing my father and also being exposed to the business early on.
And when you could look back on what you learned in college versus, you know, working with your father or you're being exposed to that earlier, and then these first years out of school, what, if any, had the biggest influence on your mindset? I mean, I'm not trying to pigeonhole you into one answer, but because I'm sure it's varied and it's mixed. But is there something that you were like, this is most applicable to what I was taking forward after school?
Yes. So early on, I wasn't always in commercial real estate. I definitely took that traditional path of I studied marketing in undergrad, great undergrad experience, Richard T. Farmer School of Business at Miami of Ohio. I started my career at Cintas, selling, you know, B2B products and services. I sold first aid supplies to office buildings, you know, car mechanic shops. So I got very comfortable going door to door and selling. So when I think about my transition into advisory or a consultative sale, such as investment sales, it really was taking the B2B and direct sales experience that I gained over the years and then translating that into a higher ticket sale. I knew it was time for me to pivot when I went to Baghdad. And for 9 months, I was in a war zone in Iraq, and I was selling management consulting services to the U.S. government. And I literally had a $12 million base contract, and the goal was to get to the $20 million ceiling by selling additional services to the military. And that's when I realized that the same consultative sale that I was doing in a war zone, I could be doing for owners and operators of multifamily and commercial assets. And there's actually no ceiling when it comes to that career pivot. So a theme and a common theme in my career has been pivoting when appropriate. And I pivoted from consulting to investment sales in 2012. And that was truly intentional because I keep on building upon experiences that I come across in my life. And one of the questions you asked was about why and how I made that pivot. I realized I was at a disadvantage. In 2012, I wanted to get into investment sales and commercial real estate, but I didn't go to an Ivy League school. I didn't have the country club relationships because my family wasn't from that world. So I couldn't just make a call and get an analyst job at CBRE or at one of the large firms. So I felt as though it was a very gated community to access, and I didn't know how to get in. But I found a company that was willing to take a shot, and they trained me on, you know, the art of brokerage and 100% commission. It was low risk for them. You know, if it didn't work out, it didn't work out. But I took that opportunity and I ran with it. And that was the start of my transition into brokerage.
Okay, we got to go back for a second because you mentioned CentOS, and how long were you at CentOS?
2.5 years. So I did the management trainee program, and at one point I was in the top 5% of all management trainees and sales professionals in the country. So 04 through 06, midway through 06 is when I transitioned into management consulting.
So I don't know if we talked about this before. So I worked for CentOS for a couple of years, and it might have been around that same time.
Okay.
But you probably did not see me on anywhere near that list because I was probably at the bottom.
Okay. Hey.
or underneath that list, man.
It's all about the market and the manager. So, you know, we'll put some onus on them.
Well, okay. I'm still really good friends with my manager. So my manager at the time. So that was
me
good.
Me too.
But man, talk about the grind.
Yeah.
That I remember there was like an unofficial slogan. So, you know, CentOS, don't sue me, but there was like an unofficial slogan that some people said, like every door, every floor, because they had every product that you go from uniforms. So I was on the uniform side. Yeah. So it was like uniform shirts, but then all the facility services, the mats, the soaps, the thing. It's
I
like,
was safe and safety. I mean, clean, lean, it's a beautiful business.
Yeah.
And they've mastered the art of growing the relationship with the customer. But yeah, you know, the hustle, it was no less than 100 stops per day, every day.
One of the biggest takeaways for me from that time is how to deal with rejection because, you know, you're knocking on every door trying to, you know, see what they need and trying to match it. But you really, I feel like the sales training there was so good. And, you know, trying how to pitch and how to overcome objections and how to stay resilient. I mean, the thing I'm probably most proud of, because obviously, like I said, I wasn't in the top anything of that company, but I kept my sanity to some respect. So that's
sure.
Probably my biggest takeaway, to deal with that and still walk away. Like I'm all right. I can be all right.
100%. I mean, it was a great sales training. It was a great company. They had a mantra, which was, you know, have a positive discontent. And when you think through that, what does that mean? It means that, you know, while we're doing well and while we are striving for excellence every single day, there's always probably some area that we can find room for improvement. And I borrow that saying daily in my life. And it's as good as business could be, and it is right now, and as good as, you know, family and relationships are, having a positive discontent to find ways to constantly sharpen, you know, iron and improve. And I look at every job I've ever had. That's why I still mention cutting grass, because I learned something in every single step and stage of my life. And it still has application to anything I do today, professionally and personally. So one thing I will say before I forget, to someone listening to this conversation, it's not a mistake that you're doing what you're doing right now. You may not feel like it's forever. So it very well may be a season that you're in this space, but whatever you're doing right now, fast forward 15 years, you'll reflect back and it'll all click and make sense as to why you're doing what you're doing right now. At least that's been my experience. And, you know, the more people I meet who are more successful than I am, they have a very similar realization that there is something that they did at the time they couldn't put the pieces together, that at some point it comes full circle. So
interesting. But okay, so I want to drill, because you just said something that I think is important. You mentioned when you talk to people that are more successful than you.
Yeah.
How would you define, in this regard, success? Like what are you gauging this on?
So my definition for success is pretty straightforward, right? I have categories, of course. So success in my health and fitness looks very different than success, you know, financially for me. Success at home for me and my family is a different metric than, you know, success in other areas of my life. But I'm always looking to get around and be around interesting people. And I was listening to a few podcasts, and there was a recent podcast that I listened to, and there's like 12 billionaires, and they basically rented it, not 12 billionaires. There's 12 people of the subgroup, three or four were billionaires. And the invitation was simple. They all wanted to be around interesting people, right? So like, that's my scoreboard now, is how many people can I get close to and truly build relationship with, not because they are worth a certain amount of money or their net worth is a certain number, because they're interesting and I have a true authentic desire to learn from interesting people. Interesting people of common background that I have, interesting and accomplished people that have nothing in common with me, who have a very different cultural experience. But I can learn from every single person, and I'm intentional about putting myself in situations where I have the opportunity, and it truly is an opportunity, to just share and learn someone else's story. And many of the people that I define successful, and I'll take it back to, you know, finances, their net worth is higher than mine. They may have accomplished some things in their professional career that I have yet to achieve. Many of them look back over their life and they didn't have it all figured out. But they definitely have the same sentiment that a lot of life was just chipping away. And through that process of chipping away, the revolution or the revelation appears and presents itself at some point. So it's the common theme. So that's my personal self-talk, is every single day when I just am banging my head against the wall, I remind myself that the most successful people who started companies, publicly or privately held, many of them did not have it figured out. They simply just kept pursuing that goal. And that's what keeps me going. I don't have commercial real estate figured out, but I know how to get in front of more people who do. And the more often I get in front of those people, I start to unpack some of the things that are missing in my skill set. So I have two rules every day. I keep my morning routine, which we can talk about later on. And I have a goal to speak with and meet 5 new people. And of those 5 new people, of course, some of them are related to my business, so multifamily owners and operators. But there's usually someone that I just want to really kind of get to know better. And that's where I find my greatest insight. There's just having conversations and learning from other people.
I agree with that 100%. That's a big part of what I do with this podcast here, is like, I want to learn. I want to know more about people and like how they got there. And, you know, one of the things that I find interesting about what you're saying about how you keep, you know, the scoreboard, you have different tiers or at least different columns of how you define success. Do you find yourself having to tip the balance and focus on where you're putting your energy? Or is that part of your morning plan of like how you're going to allocate your attention?
It's part of my morning plan, but you know, I'm 42 years old. You know, I've been married 15 years. I have 3 children, 7 or 10, 7 and 2 are the ages. They're all son, 3 sons. I've learned a lot in my short, you know, life. And what I've realized is that if I'm not whole from a physical, wellness, you know, spiritually, mentally, I've been in seasons where I was not fit and healthy, and nothing else really comes, out of me, at least. I can't speak for everyone else, if I don't have, you know, my health. So for me, health is kind of the first starting foundation for all other things. And that's not just, you know, my physical health. It's also, am I truly relationally healthy? Am I taking care of myself and making sure that I'm sharing, you know, in times where my natural instinct is to go inside and isolate? There's certain things that I know if I don't prioritize in my life, the financial goals, the career goals, the impact goals that I have for myself and my community, all those things are much more difficult to accomplish if I overlook some of those key things for myself personally. So for me, it all starts with, am I taking care of myself so that I can be a leader and take care of others that depend on me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like an airplane when they say put the oxygen mask on yourself first, right?
That's 100% right.
Yeah. So I want to make sure that we get to talk about Revolt CRE because what you're doing is so impactful. And, you know, I see where it's going and what the work that you put in so far. But before we get to that, I want to talk about your introductory, your introduction to the brokerage side of things, because I think that'll like lead right into Revolt Theory. Talk about like when you started getting into the multifamily space.
Sure. So going back a few years, but 2012, I think the year is always important because market cycles and timing, it is important. It does matter for real estate conversations. I started in 2012. I started out in Hampton Roads, Virginia. So I lived in D.C. and a national firm, Marcus & Millichap, took a chance on me. They hired me. And for the first 4 years of my business, I was a street broker. I sold private capital multifamily assets in Hampton Roads, Virginia. I lived in D.C. I drove 4 hours each way to my market. And slowly but surely, I implemented the things that I learned and I started to build a business. What it took to build a business, it was pretty straightforward. And it was truly an introduction into how to create a market and how to scale a business. And I think the skills have application far beyond commercial real estate. But there was, call it 1,000 properties in my market owned by 600 to 800 unique owners. Every single week, my goal was to get in front of 5 to 7 of those owners in person. And over time, I would convert those 5 to 7 in-person meetings per week into about 4 BOVs, broker opinion of values, per month. And if you average that out over my 4 or 5 years in that market, it was about 1 exclusive listing per month that I would engage and I would sign up and execute. And that's how I started my business, was selling 6 unit to, you know, 350 unit apartment buildings in Hampton Roads. And I really loved it. It was a high contact sport. It's a momentum business. So while I started with no experience, no track record, $0 to my name, you list a couple of deals, you start to close some, you call the neighbors and you start to build a reputation. In about 24 months, I had close to 22% market share for every single apartment building that sold in that area. So private capital. So I'm not talking about the $30 million transactions. I'm talking about the mom and pop 20 to 50 to 100 unit deal. If there was 100 trades, I was selling, you know, 22 of those on normally both sides of the transaction. So I learned by executing at the local level. And about 4 years into my brokerage business, I had built a team at that point. We did about $500 million in sales. And I was tapped by some of the leadership at that company to be a market leader and to take that experience and then elevate my game to then lead the DC, Baltimore, and Richmond operations for that company. And that was a different experience, which had different lessons learned and different skills that I developed.
So one of the things I feel like, it's not uncommon, but when I talk to people about the difference between being a, you know, a player versus a coach, and sometimes, especially in sales, there's certain skills that don't necessarily translate directly into management. Like the thing that makes you a great salesperson doesn't necessarily make you a great manager, and oftentimes it can actually work against the team. Did you find that transition challenging, or were there aspects of you and your experience that lended to you doing that well?
It definitely is a difficult transition for some. And I'll use a sports analogy, right? There's some great athletes that would be terrible head coaches. And I think it's a function of where does your heart truly sit? Because most rock star brokers, they're that way for a reason. They're extremely competitive. They prioritize, you know, their business and their self-interest, which is nothing wrong with that, right? Like brokerage is a highly incentivized, highly competitive sport where sometimes it's not about the team. It truly is, you know, a solo sport for some. The industry has changed quite a bit to now where it's more common to have a team approach to brokerage. But yeah, I actually, deep down, when I look about my career, I've been the fullback who ran the ball into the end zone. I've been on the sidelines, you know, coordinating and calling plays. And I've been a market leader in the suite, in the box up top, who is more strategic in terms of piecing together the operation and looking for strategic ways to improve and grow. And running the end zone, running into the end zone is fun. But I actually really enjoyed more of the market leader role. because that's where you actually can pour into other people and help them leverage their skills to accomplish their goals. And as a market leader, I still participate in their success, but I'm doing it through empowering them to accomplish their goals and to be successful in their own right. That for me as a person is where I thrive. I thrive more so when I can be collaborative, where I can help others accomplish their goals. And of course, I'm a capitalist. I want to participate, but my preference is to do it in a way to where if someone else is successful, I as a byproduct also win. So I was an easy transition because I think just my personality, my desire to teach and train, I'm truly passionate about helping others win in this business. My first mentee, I hired him right out of college. He went to UVA. He had long hair down to his back. He was a surfer from Virginia Beach, an athlete. He was a high competitor. After partnering for a couple of years, he still is in the business, doing well over 7 figures per year, now running a team. That gets me more excited than whatever the heck I did, right? I mean, I'm more excited about the number of people that I can reference who have found success in some form of relationship with me over the years. That's more of a trophy for me than, how many awards I've won and how many deals I've closed. That means that I truly have mastered something that I can transfer to others. And from an impact standpoint, I can do a lot more through impact through others than me focusing on just growing what I've built over time.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And also draw the parallels between, work and leading a team. And now you have, a team of young men at home.
Yes. Yeah.
I see the cross-pollination of some things and the lessons that you learn from one to the other. Do you see any of that in what you're currently doing? And like whether it's patience, whether it's teaching, do you cross-pollinate at all between work and at home?
All the time. Again, I think success leaves clues, and it doesn't leave clues only for your workplace, pursuits. It doesn't leave clues only for how to lead and how to raise young men and father. These common themes have application across various parts of my life. So when it comes to leadership, when it comes to being a role model, a mentor is a broker. You are somewhat of a father figure, right? You have to set the example. You have to not only explain, but you have to demonstrate. You have to execute what you expect. And by no means would I call advisors I worked with, my children, right? But I do have a similar passion to help them win, just like I have a passion for helping my children succeed and thrive in life. So part of that is I'm intentional. So with my children, I have Manhood Mondays. Every single Monday, we lay out a theme for the week. This week's theme was punctuality. And I kind of lay out a theme. I define it. And I give 3 compelling reasons why that theme, if executed, is a trait that successful men, have and possess. And then I leave them with a quote. And this week's quote was around Lombardi. If you're 15 minutes, if you're 5 minutes early, you're 10 minutes late or something like that. So I just find ways to be intentional about making sure that I transfer knowledge to my children. And that's a great reason. That's also as to how, I came up with the concept for Revolt CRE, which is, it was a black box that was a gated community of commercial real estate. How could I be intentional about uncovering and unpacking a very complex industry and allowing access to anyone who wants to be exposed to our business, and kind of democratizing the world of commercial real estate to anyone who wants it, not just those who grew up in the right environments, who had the right network, who went to the right school. So I've packaged up commercial real estate in a way that's accessible to the masses. And it's the same thing that I'm doing with my sons. It's very intentional and purposeful.
All right, let's dig into Revolt CRE, because this is something that that I'm really excited about.
Sure.
And when you had this concept and like what you're doing, like walk me through the steps of ideation to creation to figuring out like what the platform looks like, what the deliverables are, and where, I mean, I don't want to limit what you're saying here. I'd love to hear the challenge that you face and like how it's going and what you're pushing forward.
Sure. So the status challenge that was faced, I want to enter into commercial real estate, but I don't know how, right? So that's the problem that we're solving for. And I basically built it because it did not exist for me when I started in the business. Big companies, brokerage platforms, nationwide, regional companies, if they're big enough, they have some form of training and development for their advisors. But there's a great deal of companies that just aren't big enough to have a full-time training and development resource for talent that is coming into their four walls. So those two problems together, there's not something that exists in the industry that could help train and scale the art of brokerage, right? And then secondly, if I'm not at a big company that's already investing in training and development, I'm really just depending on my own research, my own reading, and hopefully a mentor who can guide me. So I saw the problem of how do I give access and open up the world of commercial real estate to anyone that wants access to it. And naturally, the community is a byproduct of me putting together something that can teach, educate, and train. But the community is really where I believe the power of what we're building, you know, lies. It doesn't matter what company you're at. We are a broker agnostic community. The only requirement is that you have a desire to improve your business, to learn about commercial real estate, and then to collaborate with others who are in a very similar stage of their business. So who we attract those who are 1 to 2 year professionals. So they're starting out, they're looking to gain some momentum, or those who are outside of the industry who are looking to transition into commercial real estate. So that could be residential agents, it could be college students, it could be mid-career professionals who just happen to be ready for a change. But that's the community that we're attracting, and we're executing on the problem, which is if I cannot get into a big box brokerage platform, how do I learn the same techniques and skills to build a business? And I happen to have that knowledge because I've worked for several of them, and I know the tips and the tricks and trades. I'm simply now giving that to the everyday person.
And the tools, talents, and techniques, if you will.
There we go. Tools, talents, and techniques. That's right. That's right.
So, so one thing that I think is great, but I think most of the best products, inventions, services are filling a need that, you know, that is in the market, and especially the fact that you faced it directly and you saw, like, man, if I would have just had this earlier, I could be this further along, or you know, but then you get to see how different companies do it and how they operate and what works best. And then you put your own flavor, your own spin on it. Is there a process by which you set up the schedule of how you walk people through? I mean, I'm sure it's little bits from all these different places, but like walk me through your mindset as you're building the platform.
Sure. So the first step is we have to speak the same language. So if you visit the website, I have a commercial real estate glossary that's available for download, because we can't even begin to train and build if I'm speaking Spanish and you're speaking French, right? So a common language is the first step. So I know you'll drop the website, but you can go to that website and download the glossary. That's step one. So now that we're speaking the same language, we need a foundation. So I developed the CRE Deal Flow Accelerator, which is starting from zero. What are the steps that I need to understand my market, build a business plan, and actually create a deployment strategy to then enter into the business? And while I'm doing that, I can do it on a self-paced, self-guided approach. But when that's said and done, I now need someone to hold me accountable to execute that plan. That's where the community comes in. And they're standing monthly calls. We have a call a week on various components of the business. But that's where you plug into someone that's also gone through that process themselves, who has insight, who can offer some guidance along the way, but more importantly, an accountability partner to do it alongside with you and help correct course as needed. So that is the mechanism. The mechanism is CRE Deal Flow Accelerator. That's how we are transferring my 13 years of industry experience to any and everyone that wants to learn more about commercial real estate. It's packaged in that approach to where they can guide themselves, but not be alone, do it in partnership with those who have had success.
Hmm. And so also you mentioned, you know, companies and then also individuals. So a person's coming, but then also if a company doesn't have the resources and they want to outsource some of their coaching for, where do you see, and I'm sure it's both in many ways, but like where do you see the biggest opportunity ahead for Revolt CRE? Is it like who should contact you?
Sure.
You know, probably like everybody. But really, like, is it like companies that want to learn more, like individuals, schools, like where is the focus on outreach?
There's such
or prospecting in our terms, like where are Revolt CRE prospects?
So it's such a wide audience that we serve. So we haven't been around for a long time, right? We're 6 months since inception. We've already had partnerships with the business school at Miami of Ohio. So college students that have a desire to learn more about commercial real estate. They've been members of our community and they are currently going through the accelerator program. We have established individuals. So brokers who are at several companies across the nation and different firms, they individually have found us and they have found us to be a really good resource to help fill in some gaps of knowledge and skill for their own business. And I've partnered at the platform level with companies in Illinois, in Texas, in Ohio as well, who they are scaling their operation, but they don't have the budget necessarily to hire a full-time vice president of training or sales manager, or they don't have the budget to hire a full-time regional market leader. So they've used myself and my team to complement some of their resources and their needs when it comes to training and development. So we've worked out boot camp scopes of work where it might be 2 or 3 days on site. We also have standing custom consulting agreements with smaller, I would call them more boutique and regional platforms, not so much the large brokerage firms that are publicly traded. So it's a wide range of potential in terms of how we serve the market. But it comes down to we're filling the void for those who are seeking access, knowledge, training, and skill development for commercial real estate who are either already in the business or looking to transition from either the college level or mid-career. So it really is individual and platform appropriate. It just depends on the need.
So being I know most things, like when you're starting something new off the ground, I know I've done it several times, something, but like you start to get the pace and know that there's going to be challenges and overcome it. And a lot of it mirrors the sales process and some, you know, you close the deal, you know, you got to fill your pipeline. You got to start like there's something there. Like how do you feel about your preparation for doing this and starting this and, you know, watching it grow? Like where is your patience level, your
sure.
excitement level? I mean, just, like real talk,
yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to get a plane off the ground, and
it is
just like, whoa, man. But I know from our conversations and seeing what you're doing, and the purpose behind it and the heart behind it is so amazing. Like just walk me through that, like, and how you deal with that. And maybe I'll stop with the question here. But I see from what you said previously, all of this is going in, all of your experience, all of your morning routine, your family, all of this is going into it. Like walk me through your feelings on all this.
Sure. I mean, a lot is going into this community. I'm building it for myself, say 15 years ago. So I'm truly building this in terms of what would I have created if it were available for me. And if I'm moving with that intent, and if I, you know, have that desire to truly be of value to others, I get fueled by that energy. So that does fire me up. I'm also looking at it in terms of I have all this up in my head. I need to just get it out. let me just get it out. Let me find a way to transfer it, because I know that someone is probably looking for someone like me, and they may not be able to find them as easily as they should. So what's also encouraging me on a daily basis is that there's someone probably in the very similar position that I was in, maybe young, early 20s or a college student, who had a dream of doing something in real estate that they couldn't quite figure out what it was, but they didn't know where to go. So I'm building this in hopes that I'm filling not just an industry void, but I'm also doing it for people that truly are looking for someone that they can see themselves in. So that's what's keeping me fueled. It is not easy. A startup is a startup. And, you know, there are months where, you know, you look around and you say, maybe I just keep all this stuff in my head and I don't do this. But since we've launched, I've been able to help an advisor go through negotiations with a large brokerage company that was, you know, really trying to redirect some fees. So I've helped someone to the tune of $250,000, you know, keep fees where they should go. I've helped individual producers who are on an island by themselves. This individual's in New York, running a smaller private capital business plan, gave two or three points that redirected their focus, and they found success using those strategies. And then I've helped people win. So the wins are also gasoline, you know, on the fire, of course. When I see someone that I've worked with have a success story and win, that's what keeps me going. So right now, I'm simply just executing from a place of, if not me, then who? And that's okay with me.
If not you, then who? And somebody told me this before. They said, if not you, then who? And if not now, then when? And
that's right.
You got to do it. You got to, and you're doing it. I want to ask you about, because you mentioned your father, and then I'm sure, like, along the line, there's been other people that have been influential in mentoring you and showing you certain things. Have there been any specific words of wisdom that have stuck with you over the years, or anybody said something or a specific instance that really resonated with you that stays with you?
There's a lot. I mean, I've had a lot of mentors. I've had a lot of people who have poured into me. I always kind of chuckle inside when I see someone, you know, say something like self-made, you know, did it without. Come on. You know, like, I don't know if someone that has done it without at least a kind word or encouragement from someone else. You know, it may not be a handout for someone else, but no one that I've met who's been successful has done it truly on their own. So one of the words of wisdom, it was the former CEO of Marcus Demilichap. I met him in person in my first year of the business, and he told me, it's when you are on your last dollar, when things seem so grim that you won't make it, when the breakthrough will come. And sure enough, you know, I was about 6 months into the business, savings was dwindling, and that's when I closed my first commission. And it kept me in business long enough to see, after closing my first commission, which was about $2,700, so it was not enough to keep me afloat for very long, but it was enough to mentally give me a win to stay with the fight. That's when I started to see several other closings in quick order. The month of December, in my first calendar year as a broker, I closed three deals, and I quickly saw the momentum and the acceleration. And it was partly due to just that mindset of, hey, when things seem as if you can't go on any further, keep going, the breakthrough is around the corner. And I use that when I train and I teach mentors or my mentees. The other saying that's kept me going is control the controllables. And that actually came from a current CEO of a publicly traded company. And control the controllables, especially in this market, it means we cannot predict what the Fed funds rate will be. We cannot impact policy decisions. We cannot get sellers who should sell to make the decision to sell. We can't control any of that stuff. We can simply control our inputs. So every single day, I now have enough data to know that my inputs are very predictive on the outcome. So as long as I can control my inputs on a daily basis, I know that I'm on track to achieve certain goals down the road. So those are two things right there that I live and breathe. What I will say is, reading books So, you know, why should white guys have all the fun? It's a Reginald Lewis book. And Reginald Lewis, if many of your listeners do or don't know, he was an icon. You know, he had an early death, but he was one of the first truly successful black businessmen who played a different game, played a different level than many of his predecessors. So seeing someone like Reginald Lewis and what he was able to accomplish, that was a lesson in itself. And I observed that and I took that as fuel. Reading books on developers such as Don Peebles, you know, Peebles Principles. I am not a developer in that same way. However, just the fact that I can see other people who look like me who've done it, that also was fuel. So exposing myself to others and always seeking to find interesting people, that's been a big part of my success.
You know, when you mentioned when you were talking before, and you mentioned training mentors, and you corrected yourself and said training mentees. But it's funny when you say that, when you look back on what you're doing and how you're doing it. No, you're actually right. You're training mentors eventually, because you're imparting your wisdom on them and your knowledge and the skills and the techniques, and you're training other mentors. Yeah. Maybe they don't realize it yet, or maybe they do.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe a little Freudian slip, but actually it's true. It's true. You're
it's easier
leaders.
That way, right? If I train someone to take the same things and to exponentially grow, you know, their business through partnering with others, I've multiplied myself, you know, far greater than I ever could if I was playing a one-man game. And the impact that I intend to have with Revolt, CRE, is just that. I don't want to just train someone on how to execute a business for themselves. We're building a community that will have lasting impact in the industry. And I'm doing that through empowering future leaders in our business. And that's exactly part of why I realized that I had to get this out of myself. Like, this is all in me. I've been doing this. It's no different. I've been doing the same thing for the last 13 years. But the step to get it outside for greater impact, that's what Revolt CRE truly is for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's something else when you mentioned control the controllables that jumps out to me. And this is actually, I think about it all the time, probably every day. I mean, it hit me in my soul, because when I was at Cintas, we were, oh man, this is crazy. So we were on these sales calls and, you know, going door to door. We had some appointments set up, but then we were, you know, geocoding. We were going around to the other ones nearby, the other properties. And I just heard no, no, no all day. Like, one person even threw my business card back at me.
Hey.
Like, man. And it was like 105 degrees outside, and
oh, yeah.
I was sweating through my suit. And I asked my coworker, and I looked, I was like, how do you deal with it? Like, how do you deal with the rejection? And he said, like, as we were getting in the car to leave, he was putting a piece of gum in his mouth, and he just said, attitude and activity. He was like, that's all you can control. He was like, just, you know, you got to stay positive, and you got to keep working. He's like, and you can't let anybody else's attitude or activity negatively impact yours.
Right.
And when he said that, I was so hot and pissed off, and, you know,
those were rough days with those suits and that weather at Cintas.
Rough days, man. And I remember thinking, like what, like, attitude and activity. And then I think I didn't say anything the rest of the car ride, because I was just thinking about, you know, what else is under. And I was like, wow, he's right. That's it.
That's all.
Like, those are the controllables. And It's amazing, some of those moments where, like, somebody can say something to you. I mean, I think he heard that from somebody else, whatever, but it was so true.
Yep.
And it resonated. So I'm glad to hear you say, like, that resonated with you, and, you know,
oh, yeah,
control the controllables. That's amazing.
That's it. That's all we control. Yeah. I mean, we can't control anything else. We can just control our outlook, our mindset, and our activity. And, you know, it's actually comfort in knowing that, because if you think otherwise, you run the risk of disappointment. But if every day you know exactly what's in your control and you execute on that, it's very hard to be upset, because you control the one thing that's in your power.
Yeah. And I'm sure the way I think of it, you know, I just look back for adjustments and I reflect on things and, you know, well, I did this and this was the result. So like, what can I go back and if I could do something differently, like, yeah, that's fine. But I also feel like it's important not to dwell on things, you know, and it's like, yeah, go back, reflect, and then move forward. And again, control the controllables moving forward.
It's a new chapter every day.
Every day. So I'm gonna include a lot of your information, you know, Revolt CRE and, you know, your direct contact information in the show notes. But before we take off, I want to say thank you for joining us and congratulations on your success. And, you know, anything that I can do or we, especially the BCREN as a network, can do to support your efforts, you know, always happy to do so. But is there anything else you want to share before we take off?
You know, I appreciate the conversation, and it's an invitation to anyone that wants to learn more about, you know, my career. I'm happy to meet. The coffee meeting was something that was always, you know, offered. Someone wants to pick my brain and go to coffee. Well, that's actually kind of what Revolt CRE is. It's an opportunity to have access to people who have been down the road that you're trying to go down, but it's beyond the coffee meeting. So it's the coffee meeting and it's access. So I would just invite anyone who wants to learn more about my story, who would like to have more time to just maybe share a bit about their journey. Contact me on LinkedIn. That's the best way to get a hold of me. But also revoltcre.com, and then download that CRE glossary of terms. That's the first step. It will get you in our ecosystem, and you'll be able to find me and schedule more time if you'd like to have a further conversation.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you again, Mr. Matthew E. Drain. It's been a pleasure.
Dustin, thank you so much. I appreciate it.